welcome back to Eco Talk, where we bring you sound solutions for a healthier planet. And one of those sound solutions, or so we thought, was the electric car. Non-polluting, no emissions, doesn't use any gas, doesn't use any oil. So what happened to it? In fact, who killed the electric car? Well, you may have heard that is the title for a great new movie opening up across the country right about as we speak. And I'm happy to tell you that we're going to have the principals behind that movie joining us in just a second. Some of you may have a vague recollection of that General Motors electric car. It was known as the EV1. It was once the next big thing in automotive and environmental progress. Now a fading memory and a mystery to those who believe that the electric car was the key to an oil-free future. Why didn't General Motors' EV1 electric car catch on with the American public? Why were those who leased EV1s forced to return them to General Motors? And why did GM crush those EV1s in the Arizona desert? And why did people keep vigil outside GM's Southern California plant to protest that? Well, that's all in a new documentary called Who Killed the Electric Car? It attempts to address those questions that seem unanswerable almost. Joining us is Dean Devlin, executive producer for the film, and Chelsea Sexton, an electric vehicle activist and one-time General Motors EV1 sales specialist, and who was joining us from the vigil as we checked in, I think it was about a year ago, March, April, that time?
It was, yes.
So what happened since we last spoke, and you were monitoring and tracking and I think even videotaping as these EV1s were taken off in the dark of night and trucked to Mesa, Arizona, where they were being crushed?
Well, since we last talked, that particular vigil did end, unfortunately not exactly how we'd like, and we moved on to Toyota and ended up saving about 600, 800 cars of the RAV4s and convinced them to quit crushing them as well, and have since have moved on to getting more cars built. And in the meantime, Chris Payne and Dean finished their film, and it's being distributed by Sony starting this week, actually.
Now, how did Toyota agree to keep those RAV4s in operation, where GM said, no, it's impossible to keep the EV1s out there because of liability, we can't supply the parts? What's different about Toyota's situation?
Well, the one fantastic thing that the General Motors vigil did was definitely make its media mark. And once we were able to get on the front page of the Washington Post and some different papers and some different media coverage, Toyota sort of saw us coming. And it only took about 6 weeks of protesting in front of their dealers for them to say, you know what, we've had enough. We'll just let you keep your cars.
See, the Japanese, they see it coming. That's the problem. We Americans, we're not so bright. So we're going to talk to Dean in just a moment and get into the movie. But Chelsea, I love your story about how you got involved with the electric cars to begin with and what that intimate knowledge of the development of the electric car kept you privy to in terms of GM saying, well, you know, this car just had no public demand and you knew au contraire.
Right. Well, I had gotten involved in the car industry before I was old enough to vote. I bought my first Saturn and loved what the company stood for so much that I went to work for them, and then ended up working on the EV1 program. And when we started, we really thought we had sort of the support of all of GM behind us. And as we progressed, we just saw small indications that they just weren't as sincere about this as we thought they were. And the fact that they had been forced to put the cars on the road by the California mandate certainly didn't help either. So they went ahead and met the law, but fought it at the same time, and eventually tore down the EV1 factory in late 99, early 2000, but kept telling us, if there's demand, we'll build you more cars. And so we had built a waiting list that actually you guys broke on your show for the first time publicly to get Dave Barthmas to admit that
That's
there
right.
were 5,000 people on that waiting list.
That's right. Here at EcoTalk, I just want to say we had Chelsea Sexton on and Dave Barthmas with GM, and we put them both on. He refused to go on the same segment, but it was the same show because we like to, you know, put the tough questions to those who were in a position to answer, and he wiggled a little bit.
Yep.
He said
absolutely.
It, and he said later, he goes, if you had told me it was Chelsea Sexton, I wouldn't have come on. So
I
guess they're really
the
afraid
thing.
Of you. They're afraid of you, which must make you feel good. So let's now turn to, and I'm so glad you made a film about it, because it is such an important story for many, many, many more people to be aware of. And what did you find as you started trying to, you know, look at what is the focus here? Because it is a bigger story, and there's a lot of sort of concentric circles that can go out beyond the fate of the electric car.
Well, you know, for most people who look at this from the outside, they immediately think, well, why would a car company build something and then try to kill what they build? I mean, it just makes sense if you spend money designing something, especially if it's good, that you'd want to make money off of it. So they must have tried their best to make money. And while that seems to make sense on the surface, what you have to realize is they never wanted to make this car. No one made this car because they thought it was a great idea. They made this car available to the public because they were forced to by the zero emission mandate here in California. And the irony is they ended up making probably the greatest car ever made. a car so good that it actually threatened the status quo. So there's a lot of vested interest in the status quo, which created a lot of suspects. So that's why we decided to tell the film as a whodunit.
Okay, so who did it? And I understand that you I haven't seen the movie yet. I've seen the trailer, and I've got the movie. I can't wait to watch it. You kind of set it up as a whodunit, introducing and dissecting different aspects and suspects, and at the end you come up with a conclusion as to who's responsible. I don't know if you want to reveal that to our listeners, because nobody's seen it yet, because it's just coming out. But some of the guilty parties, it looks like, are consumers, batteries. Oh, batteries are not guilty. Oil companies guilty, car companies guilty, government guilty, California Air Resources Board guilty, hydrogen fuel cell guilty. I hope I haven't revealed too much, but I just think there's a lot of guilt there, and we want to get to that part quickly, because we have more to talk about.
I think this is a lot like a Murder on the Orient Express, where we discover that all the suspects got at least one knife cut into the victim.
So the one thing that they said was, well, I mean, the car companies, I remember, said, well, there's just not enough public demand. It's too much of a hassle. The batteries, you know, Americans can't deal with having to plug in and deal with batteries. And you're saying there's no fault with the batteries. The technology actually worked fine. And they didn't promote it. That's why it never really caught on, right? And they
promoted it intentionally poorly.
Uh-huh.
I think that they and we know that they hired a PR firm to counterspin the growing demand for the car.
And you document this in the movie, because that's pretty darn nefarious right there. Let's just say that again real slowly. I mean, and the Automobile Alliance, I think the PR firm for the automobile mm-hmm. industry, you single them out for especially guilty. And I'm glad you did, because as someone who's covered this issue, I remember Aaron Shostak with that group kept quoting, saying, Americans don't care about fuel economy. They don't care about fuel efficiency. And that's why we're building these big gas guzzling SUVs. That's why we're not building a lot of hybrids and electric cars.
That's right. I mean, there's a moment in the film where a former GM board member talks about a discussion where the board members felt that Toyota was going to lose their shirt on the Prius. And he kind of wryly says, I don't think they lost their shirt on that car.
Au contraire.
This is really about corporate vision and being able to see a bigger picture. And they weren't able to do it.
You also quote a Toyota executive, though, as saying, when asked about plug-in hybrids, why aren't they making more of those, or any of those for that matter? Well, because we don't have to, because the gas-fueled hybrids are so successful. But there's a message in there, and that's that consumers have more power than we may think.
I think that's true. I mean, right now there's a six-month waiting list to get a Prius. If everybody on that list called and said, by the way, don't call me back until it's a plug-in, we'd have plug-in Priuses very fast.
Do you think we will? Is there a future for that technology?
I think that's where it has to go. Now, I don't know if it'll get there without consumers demanding it, but I think that it's the natural evolution. It's the natural next step. And I think what will happen is, if they do make a plug-in Prius that allows you to drive up the first 30 to 50 miles of the day on pure electric, what will happen is people will realize that they almost never use the gasoline, that they are driving an electric car. And I think that will open up people's minds to the idea of driving a full electric vehicle.
Now, here's a key question for you. Is the electric car dead? I got some hope in reading through your materials that maybe there could be a resurgence.
Well, there will be a resurgence. The question is, will it happen here? I mean, we know that China...
Here, as in this country.
I mean, China is going to be producing a lot of electric cars. I think it'll just be this horrible irony if we end up embracing the electric car, but we're buying all of our cars from China. So it's something where... as Chelsea likes to point out, the factory that built the EV1 is still there. There's a lot of people who'd like to have their jobs back. I mean, they could put this car back into production right away, and they should.
I understand the last of the electric cars were divvied up between universities and museums. Like, the electric car belongs in a museum in the age of global warming, war, epidemic asthma, in part from what's coming out of our tailpipes. It's beyond belief. And I remember right when your vigil was taking place, it almost makes you believe there is a green god up there, because the timing and tipping points seem to be in your favor and our favor with Al Gore's movie, post-Katrina. Why do we really need a huge wake-up call? Why does America need to wake up and smell the carbon dioxide, if you will, sooner rather than later, and really embrace some of these technologies that are within reach?
Well, I think because it's one thing to talk about global warming. It's another thing to watch what happened when Katrina hit, you know. And I think that we're in a time where many things have come together to really wake up the American public. And what's lovely about it is that it crosses the standard political debates. In other words, it doesn't matter what side of the political spectrum you're on. we all breathe the same air.
And Katrina was an equal opportunity killer and destroyer of homes and lives and jobs.
I think nobody is happy paying $4 a gallon for gas. And no matter how you feel about the war in Iraq, even those who support it, no one wants to be further involved in the Middle East because of our addiction to oil. So I think that things are just kind of coming together at the right time where this issue can be discussed in a way that maybe people have more of an open mind.
And do you remember, I think it was Hurricane Rita, right after Wilma, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Katrina, Wilma, Rita, I think in that order, and they were doing a mass exodus in their SUVs out of Texas, and the SUVs were over on the side of the road because so many of them ran out of gas because there were no gas stations. Right. They looked like dinosaurs, you know, like a dying breed. I don't know. Is the gas-guzzling SUV a dying breed, do you think?
I certainly hope so. I think the thing is that when people think of electric cars, they think of golf carts. They don't understand the potential of what these cars could do. We've learned recently that the U.S. government has a electric tank so that it can sneak up on the enemy. Well, if you can power a tank with electricity, there's no reason we can't be powering
I hear there's sheriff's deputies in a town in Florida that use, and they can sneak up on suspects because they're so quiet.
Mm-hmm.
We're just about out of time, so how can people access the movie if it's not playing in their town? Will they have to wait till it comes out in DVD
the movie is playing across the country and will be going into more and more theaters over the next several weeks.
Fabulous.
And then a short time after that, the DVD will be available. And
so glad you're doing it. Thanks so much, Dean Devlin and Chelsea Sexton, makers of this fabulous movie, Who Killed the Electric Car? It's another don't miss, just like Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth.